All right, Wednesday night on the Fan pregame. Big night in sports tonight. Eastern Conference action kicks off in the NHL. It begins a stretch of at least 8 consecutive nights of conference final hockey, the longest stretch of consecutive days of hockey until next season. So enjoy it while you can. It's going to be a good one. Panthers and Rangers, 8 p.m. on Sportsnet. We're going to have Jennifer Botterill join us in studio to help tee it up around 6:30.
What happens if you lose a series to the Chicago White Sox? We'll ask Keegan Matheson.
I don't want to find out.
And more on the Toronto Blue Jays after another newsy little item from Kevin Gausman talking about, we might not be all together if things don't turn around here. So we'll get into all of that with Keegan Matheson in about 5 minutes.
We're going to fit in some best bets as well. And if you had bet that Sheldon Keefe was going to be the next head coach of the New Jersey Devils, cha-ching, you're a winner. Breaking news before we came on just 5 to 10 minutes ago is that Sheldon Keefe will be the new head coach of the New Jersey Devils. Thoughts, Justin?
Yeah, interesting stuff, right? Keefe parlays, that dubious 2-year extension into 4 seasons of employment, 4 very meaningful and gainful seasons of employment at the NHL level. Like, clearly there is something powerful about being associated with the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? Like, no real success, a lot of superstars. Like, this should be a ground where you accomplish something, and yet nothing really was accomplished. And you get 7 years, Kyle Dubas, and a promotion with Pittsburgh. Keefe, rather, gets 4 years with the New Jersey Devils. It's like you're a made man if you're hired at one point by the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think we've seen that play out.
Yeah, I think out of the remaining coaching availabilities, that would be the most attractive one. A very young, talented core of New Jersey Devils. I mean, what, San Jose Sharks? You don't really want to coach there. The Jets had a little bit of an interest, I think, for a landing spot, but I think that's a great spot for Sheldon Keefe. He's coached some young superstars. He's going to get another opportunity to do so with the Devils, and I think that they're in a really good period where a voice, a little bit new, modern, might help them out. So I think it's a great spot for Sheldon Keefe. He's clearly was one of the best available hires at this point. So headed to New Jersey.
Maybe it partly explains too, and this might be too generous on the part of the Toronto Maple Leafs, but they have been very generous in their history, in their recent history. It kind of explains that 2-year extension. Here's this little bargaining chip, something you can use to get your next job or just stay paid while we figure things out. That being last summer, maybe that kind of went into it, right? They were trying to avoid, the distractions of having a head coach that might be on the way out, but also, I guess they respect the guy, and they wanted him to have some sort of piece that he could use if it didn't work out in the end. And maybe they were thinking there's a pretty good chance it wouldn't work out given that they were in a transitional period. So, yeah, it worked out pretty nice for Sheldon Keefe, who can get off that dock anytime now.
Maybe that was in New Jersey somewhere. We just didn't know. They have docks like that in New Jersey.
It looked a little cleaner than I'd expect the river system to be in New York City.
Of course, Sheldon Keefe had some great regular season success with the Maple Leafs. We know that. It'll be interesting to see how he parlays that into, hopefully, for the New Jersey Devils' sake, some playoff success. But we'll get into that, I'm sure, a little bit longer into the show. Let's talk about those Blue Jays before we bring in Keegan Matheson. You mentioned it. What if you lose a series to the Chicago White Sox? Well, they got 2 hit last night against Crochet, who, might be something to keep an eye out. But it was a very sad offensive display for the Blue Jays. They've seen this time and time and time again. And the White Sox are the worst team in baseball. They have to win tonight. Like, it just feels like such an important game for May 22nd, and they got booed off the field last night. Like, I don't know what else you can say and not tip your cap to the other team anymore, because it's getting to the point where you're losing games in an embarrassing fashion. And I think Blue Jays fans are really fed up.
Yeah, I wonder if this is becoming more and more of a distraction as we go. Like, we have more players that are talking about sort of the finality of all this potential, or the potential finality of all this. And maybe that is or can be a good thing. Like, there's something to be said for brakes screeching and hitting the brick wall really hard instead of it being a long and drawn out process. And that could be ultimately the two options here for the Toronto Blue Jays. Either it really, really shows itself that this isn't going to work, or you're in a position where you just have to hold out hope for a long period of time, and maybe you miss the boat on some potential moves that could put you back in this position faster. So, yeah, if the Blue Jays lose to the Chicago White Sox and can't make anything work over this winnable stretch of games, then it's going to be pretty obvious. It's laid in plain sight what this team really is, And then maybe it's easier to make tough decisions then.
All right, Blue Jays looking to end this little stretch here on a winning note against the Chicago White Sox tonight. We've got that at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Keegan Matheson of MLB.com joins us. Keegan, how are the vibes today?
Not as bad as yesterday, I guess. Give it a few hours, we'll see. But it's been interesting down here. You know, the crowds have not been given a lot to cheer about lately, I guess.
They were jesting, they were booing at the end of last night's game. So let's go look at that. Let's start with tipping the hat to the worst team in baseball. And I know John Schneider has a bit of an interesting dialogue sometimes with the media, but like this one is rubbing people the wrong way. And I think it's deservedly so, because you're losing to the worst team in baseball, and there's just got to be maybe a different message sent, or is this just the John Schneider that we should know and I guess get used to? I just feel like I saw that, I heard that post game last night after losing, getting shut out, and it just didn't help me feel any better.
Yeah, people don't like the cap tipping, I don't think, anymore. It's been tipped a lot lately. It's been tipped a lot. And it's something that you don't hear as much maybe from other teams towards the top of the league. Now, I'm aware that John Schneider is saying something different to Bo Bichette than he says to me after a game, probably. So it's not the same message they're getting in the clubhouse, but still public messaging matters. It matters to fans who care a lot about this team and are still paying a lot of money to come watch this team not play very good baseball lately. So that's one where I understand the frustration, certainly, because you are seeing this happen against someone like Crochet, who's a very talented pitcher, of course, but you're also seeing it happen against other starters not at that level quite so often. So it's something where if you are tipping your cap once a month, once every couple months, sure thing. You got to do it every once in a while, but you want to keep it on your head for as long as possible in between those moments.
Indeed, you do. You want to keep it as straight as possible. Finish a sentence for us here, Keegan. Losing a series to the Chicago White Sox for the Blue Jays means what?
Very, very bad things. This is the only team in baseball that has scored fewer runs. When I look up on the scoreboard, guys, we can go deep into a million different analytics. Put this lineup, the Blue Jays lineup, next to the White Sox lineup. Come on. Ask the casual baseball fan, how many of these names do you know? They're going to know a few more Blue Jays names. The numbers are looking a little too similar right now. And yeah, the White Sox have been playing better ball lately. Credit to them for not just folding up early this year. They've come around a little bit. But you can't be losing these types of series. That's the stuff that you would look back on late in the year if you're trying to make a run at a wild card and say, these are what you need to win. Early ended really quick this year. We're way past early, and these winnable games going into Detroit, more of those going to Chicago, that's more. You got to turn it around in these games, because eventually other teams get healthier, other teams get hotter. This is the one that you need to take.
Do you think it's possible that the potential finality of this core, of this group, of the season is weighing on this group, Keegan? I mean, we got Gausman making some comments today with Rob Longley. The reality is, quote, if we don't play well, this team will not be together for much longer. We're getting more and more insiders talking about the Blue Jays. It feels like, yeah, everyone sees what the potential outcome of the season could be. And when it's like common knowledge and something that's being talked about in the clubhouse, I imagine it could play into the psyche of these players. Like, yeah, the inability to hit is a problem, and there's clearly other issues as well. But do you think, yeah, that there are consequences? Do you think that is actually weighing on these guys and impacting performance in any way?
Yeah, reality is much more present this year than last year, because last year could have gone in any direction. You're still going to load up for this year. You still have a couple years of Bo and Vladdy. You still have the ends of some contracts. This year was going to be competitive no matter what. But towards the end of this season, you can take an off-ramp really quick. You can turn that wheel really quick. And there are different levels of players, different types of careers, I guess I should say, on this team. You have people like Gausman and Bassett who have been around. They've made some money while they've been around, and they've signed those deals. Then you have younger guys, even group Danny Jansen into that, Jordan Romano, then Bo and Vladdy, who have grown up expected to be part of this winning championship window for the Blue Jays. So there is the broader pressure of that, and then the individual pressure as you approach free agency. A lot of these guys get one chance to cash in. That matters so much. And these individual seasons aren't there, just like the Blue Jays season has not been there yet. So that has to be weighing on players. They have to be aware of that. And at this point of the year, the season goes to the trade deadline right now, and you need to make up your mind a few days before that. So there's 2 months for the Blue Jays to figure out where this is going, and that's a bit of a fork in the road that goes in two very different directions.
Okay, so let's work with the amount of time that we have left. Let's say that we're going to reignite some life into this lineup, into this batting order. How do you do that? Is that guys from Dunedin? Is that, shuffling the lineup once again? I know John Morosi tweeted today about it being the zero home runs from the cleanup spot this year, which is one of the longest ever and definitely the longest in franchise history for the Blue Jays. What do you do to make this feel fresh and exciting and new and also, produce some runs?
It's all power to me, and that stat that you mentioned blows my mind. That's like having a first-line center who hasn't scored a goal. You're halfway through the season. It doesn't make sense for the Blue Jays. There is so much power potential on this team, but the way this team and organization has talked about power has surprised me for a while now. That 2021 team with that incredible offense, we're talking prime Vladdy, we're talking that Marcus Semien incredible season, but there was a threat. There was always a threat. Now, I think if the Blue Jays are down 4-1, 3-0 in a game, I don't think many Blue Jays fans are on the edge of their seats thinking, oh, it's about to happen right here. It's a little deflating very quickly, and that doesn't make watching a baseball game very fun. Power is what made those 15 and 16 teams so incredible to watch. They were always just one swing, one at-bat away from completely changing a game. The Blue Jays are 29th in baseball right now in runs scored, but they're really low in any power numbers right now as well. They need more power because if you're hitting a home run or two, you can make some other mistakes that we forget about. That can change a game really quick. That gives you some room for a pitcher to have an off day, to make a dumb error. If you hit a home run, I'm writing a story about the home run, not the error. I think it's all about power for this team. It just has not been there whatsoever.
We're chatting with Keegan Mathison of MLB.com. Keegan, let's play a little Be a GM, indulge us with that. If you had to enter contract negotiations with one Blue Jay right now, the end result is giving out an extension. Who do you want to keep around here, knowing that, hey, we could be looking at a completely different team very soon?
Danny Jansen. I think when you look at, in terms of how realistic all of these negotiations would be and what the numbers probably turn out to, yes, Vladdy and Bo are going to be big conversations. It's hard to understand how attractive it must be in anyone's job to go into an open market and have 20, 25 teams or companies bidding on your services. It sounds real nice. And when those guys have one shot at it, if you're going to take that opportunity away, you've got to give them a ton of cash. That's going to cost you. I think both of them will most likely go to free agency. Danny Jansen is a guy who's been in this organization, goodness, 12 years now. It feels like he's 38 years old, but he's 29. He is so important to this team, and he represents a lot of what we just talked about, guys, with power, with who he's turned into as a hitter. I love his offensive approach. He's not trying to go the other way. He's not trying to slap the ball around the field. He realized a few years ago, hey, I'm good at pulling the ball. I'm going to try doing that. And watching this team this year, that's pretty refreshing to see in Danny Jansen. You don't find a lot of catchers like that. Catchers are like NFL quarterbacks. There's just not enough good starting quality catchers in Major League Baseball. So for the player Jansen is, but also just the person I see around the clubhouse, around this organization, I always say about Jansen, however important you think he is, double it, triple it, I think he's a guy that this organization should really prioritize keeping around.
Part two of Be a GM will be trading a player with term or controllability. If you could do that today, who would be the player?
Wow, so we're looking like beyond this year term.
Yes.
All right, so we'll be looking at Vladdy and Bo. I think the market for both of those guys would not be as exciting as anyone thinks at this point. Take the name away. Call them both Mike Smith. The market is not very exciting right now. I think Bo would obviously have the much better market just based on position and some consistency. But that's something the Blue Jays are going to have to look into going into this offseason. You are going to have to look at contract status, who's likeliest to re-sign, all of that good stuff. But so many of their starting pitchers, you're going to want to hold on to them if you have any chance of retooling and not fully rebuilding. But there will be calls about both of them, and I think Bo Bichette would be the one that if you're trying to really do a reset, and the Blue Jays hope it doesn't get to that point, but that's the guy where the market would be bigger.
If the market's a little disappointing on both of them, what do you think the market would be for Kevin Gausman?
Kevin Gausman at this point, especially if he turns the season around a bit, and I think he's going to. I really liked his last start. It just kind of got ugly that last inning. He should have had a better line, and I really think he's about to take off again now that he's all the way back. That market would be there. That's an amazing contract. You know, for all of the criticism and all of the negative things I've said over the last few weeks even, the Gausman deal, they nailed. That's a fantastic contract that would still be attractive to teams. There are some contracts on this team, like a George Springer, for example, who you're not going to get rid of that unless you're paying most of it. But Gausman is an example of a contract that you can move the money with it and still get back tremendous value. But he's also the type of guy that you want to keep around. Are you going to rebuild or retool? Two very different things. And as you're trying to keep people in this nicely new renovated stadium, yeah. I don't know if they'd want to go all the way down. Mm.
We're talking with Keegan Mathison on MLB.com ahead of Blue Jays and White Sox tonight, 7 o'clock. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, is Sportsnet 1. I used to play this video game or watch this video show when I was younger, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? I don't know if anybody remembers that.
Of course.
So where in the world is Joey Votto? Haven't heard from the guy, haven't seen the guy. Is he still, like, Keegan, have you seen him? Is he a part of this, like, organization? What happened to Joey?
I'm told he is still alive. He is still in the state of Florida.
Okay.
Which, you know, sometimes you can disappear in Florida for a while, but he's still kicking. It was, goodness, March 17th.
Yeah.
I was standing in Clearwater when he said, this is rolled my ankle. I believe he said it hurts like the Dickens, which is the only time a baseball player has ever said that to me.
Yeah, of course.
And he said, I'll be good to go tomorrow. There have been a lot of tomorrows since then. But Joey Votto has told the Blue Jays he wants to be completely 100% before he gets going. He is hitting live BP, which means live pitching and running the bases, so that sounds close at this point. But until he starts to get into games, it's tough to make much of a timeline. This has I know a lot of people are surprised by it, so am I. I was there the day he rolled his ankle. I've asked about him since, and this whole thing has been pretty surprising how long it's taken, because – one swing, that home run, it felt like there was some momentum.
Right.
It was a pretty fun story, but it's been a while.
So the Blue Jays looking to avoid losing a series to a team with a negative 100 run differential at this point in the year. Tonight, the matchup, Nastrini and Chris Bassitt. What do we know about who the White Sox will be trotting out there tonight? Keegan, what does this pitching matchup look like to you?
What we know about him is that someone asked me about him an hour ago outside the Blue Jays clubhouse, and I didn't know who they were asking me about. I wasn't sure if they were telling me a player's name, if it was another medium over here I was supposed to know. But that being said, the Blue Jays lineup has turned a lot of those types of names into real performers, not just this year, but in recent years. So he's coming off an outing that wasn't as bad as the other. There's something to work with there, but the Blue Jays are also coming off a game where they were facing a guy that was throwing 100 right on the corners in Crochet, who looked really good. So sometimes a starter that you haven't seen can benefit from the fact you don't have a lot on him and the fact that you were facing a real good pitcher the night before. So the Blue Jays, if they can chase him early, great. If they can get to him, great. But what this team needs to do is get to a starter more than once. We've seen this lineup have their three-run inning enough times, but too often, that's it. You're not seeing that steady, a run here, two here, one there. That hasn't happened yet. That consistency just has not been there. And fixing that, I think, is the mystery with this team.
Hopefully the person asking you about the opposing pitcher wasn't like the Blue Jays offensive team staff coordinator or whoever.
Not yet. I feel like we're a few days away from consulting me, but we're getting there.
All right, Keegan. Well, this is fun as always. Enjoy tonight as much as you can. Thanks so much.
Hey, you got it, guys. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, definitely. Keegan Mathison, MLB.com. Blue Jays and White Sox. Blue Jays are -250 favorites tonight against Nastrini.
Again, I'm assuming
Keegan didn't Nastrini, know the guy.
If that makes me feel a lot better that I don't have any insight on Nick Nastrini.
Here's the stats. He's got an over 8 ERA.
Yeah.
So the Blue Jays need to win this baseball game. You got Bassett on the mound.
This is typically the type of pitcher that does.
I understand.
Like when there's no book on them, and the Blue Jays, of course, the offense has been what it's been. It's kind of scary. What is it, minus 240, you said?
Minus 250 money line.
I don't
for
think
the
I'd
Jays
be
tonight.
Running to bet that. The lineup tonight, though, for the Toronto Blue Jays, Schneider, again, will be leading off. Mm-hmm. Varsho Guerrero Jr., Bichette, Turner. I guess Bichette, a chance to hit a home run at that cleanup
position. That would
position.
Be nice.
Turner, Biggio, Kirk, Kiermaier, Kiner, Falefa, Chris Bassett on the mound. Chris Bassett is an interesting one, too. Like, he's the same as Gausman in a lot of ways where, like, yeah, a ton of utility, a ton of value if you indeed put them on the open market. Like, the Blue Jays could have the best damn fire sale in the world if they wanted to do that, right? There's a lot of premium assets on this team. It was supposed to be a competitive team. But if it's more of a retooling where it's, yeah, we want to be really good next year and we're just going to nibble around the edges, then maybe you don't get anything done that's seriously consequential. But again, if you really wanted to tear it down, you could really flip this thing quickly with prospects and futures capital because, yeah, pretty much everyone is a pretty good asset that they can be given up.
Tough timing when you want to get butts in the seats, though.
Yep.
It's a hard thing to sell.
That's the realities.
Okay, let's look at our best bets for tonight. I'm going to tonight's Eastern Conference matchup between the Panthers and the Rangers. I've been big on the Rangers. As you know, I picked them to win the Stanley Cup. So I'm getting them minus 110 tonight. It's basically a coin flip to win game one of the series. It's at home. It's at MSG. Both teams have had a pretty lengthy rest. Rangers had 6 days off. The Panthers had 5. We'll go through all this tomorrow. I mean, after the break in our chat with Jennifer Botterill. But I just think the Rangers are going to come out flying tonight. I mean, the Panthers probably too. But I like them to take game one when you're seeing the Rangers minus 110. And they're getting, like, not a lot of love in terms of predictions for this series. Like, yeah, I'm saying the Rangers get off on a hot foot tonight.
Okay. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I do like the Toronto Blue Jays tonight. I'm not doing the 250.
I did that last night, and they lost 5-0, so.
I just, again.
Sorry.
Keegan's kind of talked me out of this, but it's on the graphic.
It's so on
I gotta
the
go
graphic
with it.
Now.
It's on the graphic.
That's too bad.
It's just a minus 100 run differential. They've played, I believe, less than 50 games. So averaging, every time they run out on the field, they're losing by 2 runs or more on average. That's crazy. The White Sox are bad. The Blue Jays are facing a guy with a, what, 8 bloated ERA?
Yeah, something like
again,
that.
Again, they could trip them up because that's what happens. But on paper, it should be a favorable matchup for the Blue Jays. Maybe we see some urgency tonight. Maybe 2 runs can cover this number, given that Chris Bassett will be dealing with one of the lesser lineups that he'll face, at least to this point in the season. But again, like it just feels like wishful thinking as it comes out of my mouth.
Okay, so what's your read on Panthers-Rangers? You don't seem as confident Panthers lose game one.
Yeah, I didn't think the Panthers played, like, overly well against the Boston Bruins. Now, the Boston Bruins kind of do that to you, right, where they're just trying to dumb it down. They're trying to minimize the shot quality. They're trying to hit you on the counterattack. And it is sort of like a flummoxing, annoying style that can trip up a team, but ultimately didn't really get them anywhere. So maybe they look better against the New York Rangers. I do think the Florida Panthers are the best team in the Eastern Conference and should be favorites in this matchup. But I'm not as confident now as I was before I saw them kind of look okay at times versus the Boston Bruins. So I'd like to see them reignited a little bit. Maybe the Rangers can do that or bring that out of them. But Rangers are a team that's relied exclusively on special teams to get to this point. And Florida, you know, they're a 5-on-5 juggernaut that maybe can expose the Rangers in that regard. So I still like Florida, but I'm feeling a little less enthusiastic.
Okay. Come on over to the Rangers side with me.
I'm just not going to double down.
Okay.
Just put it that way.
I'm going to say, I feel like this is going to be a really close series. Like, I bet it in 7 games, like coaching-wise, really tight. Goaltending duo is unbelievable in this. You got both teams with a little bit of grit to them, some physicality. Pretty balanced in terms of their scoring. Like, I can't wait to see. I'm pretty excited about Rangers and Panthers. And, of course, we're going to get into Stars Oilers tomorrow. But we'll take a quick break. Jennifer Botterill is going to join us in studio, help us tee up tonight's game, look ahead to tomorrow, Stars and Oilers. And then we'll take a break and we'll talk about, is Edmonton Canada's team? Like, are Canadians cheering for Edmonton? We need to know. Text us in at 590-590 because they're a very Canadian-heavy team. So are we, you know, are we cheering for them? We'll be back on
we'll
the
find out.
Game.
In-depth Blue Jays coverage with an analytical twist. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan pregame. Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're joined in studio with Jennifer Botterill joining us. Help us tee up tonight's big action. Eastern Conference kicks off tonight. It is Florida and the Rangers. Jen, how's it going?
It's going really well. Thank you. Great to see you both.
We're excited. I mean, I've been fired up about the Rangers. They're my team just because I needed to pick one and ride with it. And we're cruising along here. But when you look at the Rangers and the Panthers, like, what's the story of this matchup for you?
Well, I feel like you've got two great teams. You know, I still think that goaltending might be near the top of the list in terms of intrigue. You think back to even Bobrovsky, and I think about that save that he made in round two, game two, to seal the... It almost felt like sealing the victory in the second round of game two against the Lightning. And I think Shesterkin, he's sort of chasing history books in terms of the stats and how well he's played in the postseason for the Rangers. I think from him, you've seen feistiness, you've seen great saves, you've seen the ability to play the puck and help the breakout. So I think that's one big storyline. But I also feel like, I'm always drawn to the offense, and I feel like you have a number of elite forwards that have been great. I think special teams, too, are, as always, a big factor. I feel like the Rangers have been great on the power play. Mm-hmm. And their PK has been outstanding, too. But now you're facing a Panthers PK that was very strong in the second round against Boston. But I think, great. I mean, people seem quite happy. If you follow Panthers, how well Barkov is playing, sort of the best that he's ever played in the postseason. And then I still think the Rangers' Lafreniere is a pretty nice story on the confidence he's built throughout the season and how well he's playing. So I think the Rangers' top six are still pretty impressive to watch.
Yeah, the Rangers, interesting you mentioned there, and the reliance on special teams. They've been outscored at even strength so far in the playoffs, but plus nine overall. So they've been leaning on that power play. Mm-hmm. How sustainable is that? Like, maybe it works against Washington, and I suppose it worked against the Carolina Hurricanes, who had their issues in special teams. But, like, can you rely on that to win a Stanley Cup? Can you just be a special teams team and win a Stanley Cup?
I don't think so. I think it's always nice when your special teams are doing well. And I feel like those details can be the difference, and they have been for the Rangers, clearly. But I also feel like when you look at the depth of the Rangers, and if they don't have the stats that are as impressive perhaps as they should be yet, 5-on-5, like when you look at their lineup, and Hedl, it looks like he's back in for tonight as well on their third line. And you look at their 3D pairs. I even think like Schneider on their third pair has been a great, solid sort of young D for them that maybe it hasn't happened yet, but you've got to think that completeness to their game should come as well.
When you look at this amount of time that they've had off, both teams have had like 5 or 6 days off,
yes, which is,
I guess at this point, maybe helpful for, as you said, like people getting back in, they're not injured anymore, but... Do you think maybe we see in the first period like a little bit of a slow start, a little bit of the rust, or just coming out like a shot out of a cannon? It's MSG, it's the conference finals. Like, I always wonder about rust versus rest.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd lean more towards that they're ready for this. That I think that rest can be so valuable. And if, you know, I feel like from both of these organizations, the comments they've shared, I mean, if you can get your players to get a little bit of recovery, small recovery windows, I just feel like that can be such a weapon in the postseason. And so, to me, even if you think about the Rangers, I feel like Laviolette's talked a lot about how competitive this team is, how driven they are in practices, and the ability to work on those elements of your game, whether it's the, you know, your special teams, your 5-on-5 play, to have those windows of time with your practice to focus on that and compete. To me, I mean, you've heard the comments, even Kachuk's talking about how fired up he is to play at MSG. I mean, and the atmosphere, the energy that I anticipate that these teams will be at the top of their game when the puck drops.
You sort of mentioned it earlier with Igor Shesterkin being kind of the identity of the Rangers, right? Like, if not the, like, he's the most important player for the team probably, but also geared to, hey, how can we make him the best as he can be? Schneider on a third pair, a really good defensive core, a diligent team in a lot of ways defensively. If that's the identity, you know, really strong goaltending, keeping the puck out of your own net, if you're the Rangers, what's the Panthers' identity for you?
They've been an amazing team to watch. And to me, I think there's a level of determination with the Panthers. And I feel like they are a tough team to play against. Mm-hmm. And that's something where you look at this matchup to see, you know, there's a lot of dynamic offense for the Rangers, along with this strong defensive play and the backbone of Shesterkin. But I feel like the Panthers, they play tough, they play heavy, and they've got speed to back that up. And I feel like for this team, last year it was just this amazing run that they went on the postseason. But it felt like all year this year, the expectation was different. And there was just, whether it was a more serious approach, as how Maurice at one point described it to be earlier in this postseason, which is, you know what, this team's just a little more serious, a little more focused on what we believe we can accomplish this year. So I think you're seeing that in their on-ice play and making sure that with their great elements, they are always a really tough team to play.
Did anything, you know, it was tough against Boston, right? Like, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy as maybe it even felt like in the end after six games. Mm-hmm. Like, it was kind of, you know, a late winner from Forsling. They dropped game five. They dropped game one. They did win three in a row in between there. But it just seemed like they really had to fight for it. And it was maybe not at the margins, but it was close to the margins. Did anything concern you about the lack of ease to which they got through Boston?
I don't think so. I honestly think you look at the number of teams that were elite this year and in terms of playing in the second round. And I also feel like if you're the Panthers, you might not mind a little bit of what, not a huge adversity, but you have to work for it. Mm-hmm. That it hasn't always come really easy. And I feel like that can be, especially now that you've had some time to rest and recover and build off that. I feel like those are elements you learn from those tight games. You don't want everything to be a breeze, right? And so I think that for the Panthers, when you get to that stage of play, even the second round, I mean, I feel like every organization at that point believes that they can win the cup. Mm-hmm. And so to me, whether, you know, you're not going to sweep every series. And so I feel like for the Panthers, it's learning from those moments. I don't think their belief wavered, but I feel like you saw moments, Maurice, where we've seen the intensity behind the bench of knowing his team can be better and then responding in those moments.
We often talk about the Conn Smythe on our show because of betting odds, but when it comes to the Panthers, you would have thought Bobrovsky would have had like the stranglehold on it for a while, but Barkov's playoffs, and we just mentioned him a bit ago, has been almost like putting him on another level, and maybe we don't give him the credit that he deserves throughout the regular season, but when your own teammates like Matthew Tkachuk saying like, Barkov's playing at another level, and you see that, and you really focus on what he does, like how important is this series for Barkov to help them get over the line to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs, finals? Like, is he the number one most important player for the Panthers?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, Tkachuk, right? He's saying he's another level. I mean, Tkachuk's raving about him. Like, he's the best player in the world right now is another comment that Tkachuk made. But I do feel like for a long time, people have wondered if Barkov is perhaps one of the more underrated stars of the league on how well he plays, the game that he brings. And I just feel like even he's another example, though, when we talk about this Panthers team and the internal belief, and even Barkov has shared about coming into this season and being in better shape than he ever has. And, you know, you sort of see that. Is he now peaking at this point in the playoffs, which is what you want? I mean, not only do you want to make the playoffs, but you want to make sure you're playing your very best at this point. And he's just coming off a series where he had the highest point production he's ever had in the postseason in one series. And so you're just, and you see the respect. Like there was when Barkov made that huge shot block late in the series against Boston, he goes to the bench and Tkachuk is the first one next to him, patting me on the back, tapping me on the knee. I mean, for like 25 pats, it wasn't just good job. It was like, are you all right? That was a huge play. We're behind you. Like, I feel like absolutely he's a huge factor for the success of this Florida team.
Yeah, I think he doesn't get the respect because the numbers are never going to be gaudy, right? Like, you have to watch a lot of Florida Panthers hockey to be like, wow, he is exceptional. And and let's be honest, not everyone's tuning into 82 straight games of Alexander Barkov. This is the time when we get it. And definitely the appreciation ramps up at a moment like this. And you're right, he might be the peak of his powers at this exact moment. Let's go to the Western Conference Final at Dallas. Edmonton. We asked you about the story of the matchup for Florida and New York, so let's do the same. What's the story of the matchup when looking at Dallas and Edmonton?
Well, this is a fun one. I heard you guys had a little debate here before I joined the show, but in terms of the highest level of talent, and you see the offensive production from the Oilers and their top guys playing incredibly well. And all season long for Dallas, the story was depth. And I feel like it's the same at this point of the playoffs. You've got Haskinen leading their point production for Dallas. So I also feel like, I mean, I also mentioned the goaltending. Still in this series, it's been fascinating. You look back to the series against Vancouver and at points where you had Pickard and Shelovs, and now Skinner's back in, and he's faced adversity in his career before, and being, you know, to handle that and come back and be steady, be reliable. But I think, of course, it's the Draisaitl and McDavid, and can they continue, right, with the incredible pace and production playing against a team in Dallas that has a lot of depth. Haskinen's been incredible. I mean, there's sort of different levels. What's the elite forwards, whether it's D, because Bouchard's been amazing. Ekholm's been so solid, and you're facing Haskinen. I mean, Ottinger, too. There's moments, even post-game interviews that Ottinger has done, where his calmness and his demeanor, mm-hmm. you think, okay, you know, of playing in these moments where he just looks, he's like, he's just finished a yoga class at the end of a game, right? Like, he's just so calm and steady. In the net. So, I mean, another great series, right, with incredible talent.
I want to get back to the Bouchard comment, because for me, this has been like the breakthrough. And once again, there's probably Oilers fans that are like, he's always been this good. But, you know, when you really get to focus and watch all of these playoff games and see when a star gets their moment, it's like Bouchard has been that for the Oilers. It's been outstanding to watch. And I think that they're probably feeling really confident about his progression. But same kind of thing with Barkov and Bouchard needing to be like that heart and soul. Like, what have you seen just in his development over the last two series to be a guy that's helping lead with Draisaitl and McDavid? Yes. It's like Draisaitl, McDavid, Bouchard, and Hyman. It's like, it's incredible what's happened.
But you know who else had put in that list, though? And Nugent Hopkins as well, right? Yeah. If you think about these other elements where it's been so long, like McDavid and Draisaitl, which they continue to lead the way. But now you have these other storylines that are creeping up in terms of that importance on the season that Hyman had, the postseason he's having. Nugent Hopkins, right? 5 points in the last two games of the last series. And Bouchard. And you know what? Knobloch was the one that said, you know, you can't talk about Bouchard without talking about Ekholm. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Neither of them are finalists for the Norris, but they're not far off in terms of how well that they've played. And I think there were moments, even Ekholm in the last round, where he was getting, you know, points in every game. And Bouchard, he's always had this skill set, but I think to be able to bring it through in these big games, get huge goals for the team when they needed it, it's just, I feel like, adding sort of to the belief, right, that the Oilers have.
Yeah, I think Ekholm has helped Bouchard out a lot too, like being the best version of yourself, because you can rely on a guy like Ekholm who could also help you in ways in which you were deficient compared to what your strengths were, and we're seeing it come together for Evan Bouchard. But it feels like we can just go to the defenseman, because Bouchard was better than Quinn Hughes in this matchup. Now it's Heiskanen versus Bouchard in a lot of ways. And Heiskanen's playing like a half hour a night, because Dallas has only five defensemen, maybe getting a six back here soon. But Heiskanen has worked, the workload has been immense for him. And he might be the front runner, him and Ottinger, if we're talking about the Conn Smythe with the Dallas Stars. But is that, at a certain point, if it's 30 minutes a night, does it become a problem? Like, can anyone deal with having to play every other shift every night, 24 games maybe on the path to a Stanley Cup? Like, is that too much eventually?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think if you're the best players, I mean, it does sound maybe on the verge of maybe crazy in terms of total ice time, but I also feel like players know if they can handle it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, you know, I mean, this is a long time ago in my college playing career, but I feel like our coach like played us a ton. And I just feel like if you are an elite player, like Haskinen is, how well he's playing, you're ready. You're ready to play those minutes. And, you know, for a lot of athletes, you know, and a lot of players, if they're not used to playing those kind of minutes, well, then there's no way. There's no way that they could play that amount and play at their peak potential. But I feel like he's an athlete in terms of his efficiency on the ice, how he's played. He's always played a lot of minutes, maybe not quite as many as he had in the postseason. But I also feel like that's something, as a coaching staff and as players, you continue that communication. But I don't know, from a player's perspective, no, you're all in. You don't have to save it at this point. Like, you can be out there. You want to be out there. And with how well he's playing, I say play him as much as you can.
Yeah, and adrenaline ramping up too. Like, you're almost at the finish line. I and some guys maybe more than others. Like, Heiskanen's so smooth too.
It
seems like a guy who could probably handle playing every other shift. The Oilers, so they squeak by Vancouver in a lot of ways. Yes. And Vancouver was trying to kind of dumb it down to a certain extent. Hey, we're not going to run and gun with the Edmonton Oilers, because why would you? But Edmonton did have its hands full with Vancouver, and Dallas is considered to be just as deep, just as talented, just as good in net. So if the Oilers are going to get past this challenge, what needs to be better? Like, we understand the level, the power play, Bouchard, Dreisaitl, McDavid, Hyman, Nugent Hopkins, all at a really high level. But when you look elsewhere, what needs to be a little bit better for them to compete with the depth of Dallas?
You know, likely just solid defensive play. And, you know, you think Knobloch, even adjusting the D pairs for the Oilers, right, in the last series to figure out what was going to be the best mix for them in terms of, you know, playing all three D pairs. I think that's going to be key. I mean, you're facing, you know, we talked about Heiskanen's offense, but I feel like up front, I mean, even Wyatt Johnson, you got to mention in terms of the skill that he's showing. I mean, Stankoven, they've had other players for Dallas that have stepped up and had some big skill moments for the Stars. So to me, I just think it's that collective defensive responsibility. We've seen the flair, the incredible plays up front by the Oilers, but I think you're seeing more of a commitment to them and preventing, even the last series, right, preventing Vancouver from getting inside for quality offensive zone opportunities. So I think it's maintaining defensive responsibility.
I said it at the beginning of the show, tonight starts a stretch of at least 8 consecutive nights of conference final hockey.
Better be more than that.
The longest stretch of consecutive days until next year. So, Jen, enjoy it. Let it all get you fired up, because soon we'll just be like golfing, which is fun too. But we appreciate you taking the time before tonight's game. I appreciate it. And we'll have you on again for sure.
Sounds great. Thanks,
Jen.
Thanks
so much.
Okay, that's Jennifer Botterill in studio. Help us tee up tonight's game. Rangers, Panthers, that's at 8 o'clock tonight. It's the Eastern Conference final kicking off. And then tomorrow we'll have the Stars and the Oilers, and it'll be a big one as well. Lots to go through, lots of storylines ahead. And we did ask the text line at 590-590 to let us know if they were cheering for Edmonton. And wow, did we ever get a response, Justin? Just like it was a passing comment that we had upstairs while we were getting ready for the show, because you know, shout out to Frank Saravelli, our friend, who mentioned that this is actually the most Canadian team to ever make it to a Final Four, Canada, the hockey version of the Final Four here. Mm-hmm. It is in no team in the Canadian, in the salary cap era, has made it to the NHL's Final Four with more Canadian-born players on the roster than the 16 in Edmonton's 20-man lineup this season. So this is the most Canadian team to ever make it to the Final Four here. So I asked right before we went to break if at 590, you'd be cheering for the Edmonton Oilers, and an outpouring range of responses. So here's an example. Ron from Scarborough. I'm a Montreal fan, but yes, I am cheering for the Oilers. I love holding it over people's heads that we are the last team that won the Cup in Canada, but this is getting ridiculous now.
I think that's the key, right? Because I remember growing up, like, Calgary going to the Stanley Cup final was one of the most, like, memorable runs I had watching hockey. Edmonton in 06, the same. Ottawa in 07. Like, I was all in on these teams. But I think it's got to a point now where it's been so long and Canadian teams have struggled so mightily that no market or no fans outside of a market are looking at another Canadian market thinking, like, yeah, I really want this to happen for you, right? I feel like the scar tissue is built up in a way where we can't play nice. Like, we can't share the ball. We can't be happy for someone else in the schoolyard.
There's some folks that are. Okay. Like,
and I like that attitude. Like, I want, it's more interesting for me. But if I'm, like, a diehard fan of a team, especially Vancouver right now, or Calgary historically, like, I think it'd be tough.
Okay, here, I've got a Vancouver Canucks fan, Diane, saying, yes, I'm cheering for the Oilers, even though my Canucks lost in a heartbreak game the other night. I live in Vancouver. Go Oilers, go. I don't know if that's like,
wow.
If Diane, you, proud of you. Bold and proud.
Let's keep the last name off the line. Yeah, for sure.
Just Diane.
Just to make sure.
If anyone knows a Diane in Vancouver, it could be you. So here's another one. Lauren from Calgary saying, absolutely not cheering for the Oilers. There's an Alberta rivalry for a reason. After all, ABE stands for anybody but Edmonton.
Well, how do you feel?
I'm kind of torn on it. No, I'm not torn. The only reason I might pretend that I'm torn is that I've bet the Rangers to win.
Okay, take that.
But that aside from it, I would absolutely love to see a Canadian team win a Stanley Cup. And just for that reason alone, it's like 30 years since a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup. And that is 31 year. And it's just, you know what? I'm obviously born and raised in Toronto. I'm a Leafs fan. But there's a lot of great Canadians on that Oilers team, and it feels like getting a win for Canada. We're going to have the whole Olympic thing. We're going to have the Four Nations face-off, but this feels like a little bit of Canadian pride to see the Oilers get an opportunity, you know, to win a Stanley Cup for us.
It might be a little bit different, too, because it's Edmonton. I mean, I think everybody in Canada's second favorite team historically has been the Pittsburgh Penguins because of Sidney Crosby, right? And we get the golden goal, and we get, you know, this adulation, and we get so much support for Sidney Crosby because, you know, he's the guy who was carrying the flag, scoring the goal, doing all the things for Canada. And one of the finest moments that, you know, us sports fans in Canada can remember. And Connor McDavid is kind of down that path in some ways, right? Like, he is the next great player. He is, of course, Canadian, and he is the face of hockey. And for that reason, yeah, a lot of people want to see him have success. Others want to see him fail, I suppose. But I think in general, like, it's just more interesting and better for the sport if the best player is competing for the Stanley Cup, and maybe you want to see them lose the Stanley Cup final because you just want that interesting storyline. But I think there's also something to say for just like cheering for the best Canadian athletes to have success. Yeah. I think that's just something we've done historically. I think you blur the lines a little bit in hockey, but yeah, I think some people, in the same way they've been cheering for Sidney Crosby, will feel the same
way of economy. Like, do you want to see Jamal Murray win, Shea win? Like, those things matter.
I think it's easier because you're not like, oh, I'm a Flames fan, of course I'm not going to cheer for Connor McDavid. Right. But yeah, Shea goes Alexander. Sure, of course. I can cheer for him.
Of course. So what's the best NHL Stanley Cup final that you could see with your eyes in about a week and a half?
If I could just like orchestrate it any way I want. I think because I am a better for the game kind of guy, better for the storylines, better for talking about like Connor McDavid's legacy, it would be New York, Edmonton, because it would be the biggest market.
And you know you'd make your co-host happy.
And that too. The biggest market, though, in the United States, I guess, arguably. But yeah, New York is huge. And a Stanley Cup final in New York.
And 30 years since they won their last cup, sorry. I think that storyline's awesome going into it. Mm-hmm. Like MSG, Rocky, you got the Stars.
Hits like a little different MSG than Connor McDavid going to Sunrise. Let's be honest.
I agree with that.
So you get the biggest star in the biggest market, biggest star versus the biggest market. I feel like that is the best storyline, the best thing for the broadcast networks.
I think that's definitely my first pick for sure. I don't know if it's like the least interesting one, but, you know, is it Dallas versus the Panthers kind of just, oh, maybe the way it was written out, like, yeah, that's the best team. And that we always thought the Panthers were going to be really great. They just kind of find their way in the final against Dallas, but maybe be the less punchy one for me. But I mean, I'm definitely on Oilers Rangers. And so are a lot of people on the text
line. Yeah, I mean, Florida Dallas, like, Jeff Merrick will be loving life. Like, it's hockey hipster.
That's a lot of Jeff Merrick's matchup.
And I would love it too. Like, let's be honest. I mean, Heiskanen versus Barkov, yeah, it's not the thing that you're going to put up on the marquee at Madison Square Garden because they're not going to be playing at Madison Square Garden. But it's still hockey brilliance. It is still two unbelievable teams, probably, frankly, the best two teams in the NHL this season or in each conference this season. But would it be the best for storyline? Maybe not quite.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we do this quickly for the NBA? Because we saw one last night that went to OT. But your best matchup for NBA Finals, for me, Boston, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Like, I want Anthony Edwards. Like, I mean, Boston, I watched them almost blow it yesterday. The Pacers basically just gave the game away. And I would like to see what Boston does with an opportunity there to win one. But Anthony Edwards
can't really
amazing.
Miss because you do have a superstar in each market in the Western Conference. Luka Doncic, Anthony
Edwards.
But
the Pascal Siakam loving me. I just think that the Pacers would just get cooked by whoever they play, so I wouldn't want to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think their time's probably coming right now. They probably blew the game that they were going to win in the series
they had
last night. Boston's obviously a great team for the NBA to be in the final, and they are historically good. It's just, do they actually have a foil on the other side? Like, how interesting is Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year versus historically great Boston? I think Luka versus Boston is probably slightly better, but if Anthony Edwards turns into Michael Jordan, then yeah, this is the first time MJ or the new MJ goes to the final. That's a good storyline.
Yeah, it's great to watch. I mean, he's hilarious. He's kind of unhinged, and I guess that's what you want from superstars sometimes. He's young and like hasn't really been in this spotlight moment, and he's taken the most of it, and he's really delivering some personality. So it'll be fun to watch. But yeah, okay, tonight you get to watch the Rangers and the Panthers. It's game one of the Eastern Conference Final tonight. 8 p.m. start on Sportsnet. If you're looking for the Blue Jays and the White Sox, we got that one for you too. Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. It's Bassett on the mound, and they got to win this one. That's just it.
By the way, love the 8 p.m. starts. I can get home in time to watch all of Florida, New York. It's great.
I love it. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow on Baby Friday. Have a good night, everyone.